Okay, so the idea that the Mesillas Yesharim is trying to get across to us is that a person has to use their existence in this world as a mashal to how they view the world to come as well. And if there are times when it really bothers us, when other people receive more covet, more recognition, more acknowledgement for what they did, so then we wouldn't stand for that. It would bother us, and hopefully it would motivate us to work harder in order to earn the same recognition. And there's a jealousy, there's an envy, there's a burning inside that can plague a person when they feel that they're not given the appropriate accolades for their accomplishments. And certainly to realize that everyone gets what they deserve, right? So then it really is impossible to deny the fact that if that's going to be my reaction, that's going to be my reaction in the context of Olam Hazeh, which is fleeting, which is essentially unimportant, and essentially the covet is all in our imagination. It's all just the way we allow ourselves to think and the way we allow ourselves to be motivated. Then kavachomer b'menosh kavachomer, you just got to realize when you're in the Olam HaEmes, there are no two ways about it. And we're talking about eternity, we're talking about reality, we're talking about the ultimate reality, and the stakes are much higher. And if we can't compare the two, so then the whole thing is really just an excuse. That attitude, why should I work so hard? It'll be okay, I'll take what I can get, I'll take my b'dievedik olam haba. It's really just an excuse. And it's the way the Yetzer Hara convinces us not to put in the effort. There would not be any room to have that attitude if we saw the truth. Because we're not always seeking truth, we're just sort of going through life, living the way we want to live, without any pressure, without any restrictions, without having to understand the responsibilities that are upon our shoulders. Then that pitoy, that self-seduction that the Yetzirah is guilty of imposing upon us, we won't realize it. It won't. It'll stay with us until it's too late to do anything about it. Because you can get to the point where you can't fix it, where there's no more time, there's no more opportunity to be masakin. Pasuk Kol says, everything that's in your hands, do. Don't slack off. Don't look for shortcuts. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. To the extent that a person is not giving it is all according to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts in his ability to accomplish, which means to engage and to maximize the free will that he's blessed with, that he's endowed with, throughout his life, that he's obligated to make those right calls, make those right choices. So there's a time to do it, and after he dies, then it's worthless. It's just that koch ha-bechira can't do anything for him anymore. If you weren't marba mitzvos during your lifetime, you just can't do them later. Someone who never took accounting of his actions, it's not going to do any good. You're not going to have the opportunity to do the cheshbon nefesh and correct things once you're at that point. If you didn't take the time to be mischakim, to raise your knowledge, increase your chachma, to take advantage of the opportunity to learn. So in the kever, in the grave, you're done. You have no more opportunity to do that. So it's very powerful. You know, sometimes nowadays, if a person walks around talking about death and is always frustrated that, time is running out and his life is short, And when he's in the grave, he won't have the opportunity to do any of it. Right? You think the guy is crazy? You'd send him for some therapy. Maybe not crazy, but you know, nowadays we would say he has mental health issues. We would say that he has to work out some anxieties that he has in his mind that are causing him to focus on death when he should really be engaging in life. Okay, I'm not trying to belittle Chas V'Shalom mental health challenges in any way. But we would classify someone who walks around thinking about death all the time as someone who is unhealthy. And at the same time, you see in Chazal that there is actually a very healthy way to keep in mind, l'hazker yom hamisa, that that's actually a powerful tool that a person has to use in the right way, not in an obsessive way, not in a way that preoccupies him, but in a way that motivates him. We always say, Yir Shamayim, as Rabbi Waxman said, Yir Shamayim should not be paralyzing, should be galvanizing. If a person is preoccupied with death and that's paralyzing for him, that's not healthy. But it should push him to his limits. Remember when my family lived in Eretz Yisrael for a short time, so we lived in Ramot. And Ramot Bet, at least where we were living, so our porch, our front patio, where the sukkah was, where we, you know, the weather was nice, we would sit outside, overlooked Har Menuchos. And I remember so many Shal Shudas times sitting out there watching the sunset over Har Menuchos. And it was a very powerful sight. You know, Shal Shudas time is already, you know, you can draw on very powerful emotions of the Kedusha departing from a person's existence. The Neshama Yisrael has 1 foot out the door. Shabbos is ebbing away. And it's a time which is ripe for some serious thought and some serious contemplation. And to watch the sunset over Har Menuchos, over the endless sea of graves, at Shal Shudas time is very powerful. And it's a healthy Maaser Yom HaMisa. And he says, like, you know, if we have to do it like this, we'll compare it to college, okay? You know, like I was talking to someone the other day who was really feeling a lot of stress because it just hit him, like, for the first time he's in school and his grades are actually going to matter for the rest of his life. And we know some people take high school seriously, some people don't take high school seriously. And if you don't take high school seriously, it's because you're still going to get into yeshiva, you're still going to get into YU for sure, you know, like, and you'll get by, life will continue. And it doesn't really matter that much. There's no job recruiters or people on, you know, interviewing and asking what your high school GPA was. I guess, I don't know, tell me if I'm wrong, but I haven't heard that to be an issue. So people are able to put that behind them and get more serious in college. But when you're under pressure, so then you do your best to perform. So just like there's an end point. I got to finish the semester with a certain grade. If I don't do the work during the semester, it doesn't help. I can beg the professor all I want to do some sort of makeup assignment over the summer. I know maybe that'll work like for my Rebbe. Just kidding, maybe not this Rebbe. But but sometimes you can push the limits a little bit, but usually you can't. You know, time's up. This is a window. These are the months that you have the opportunity to invest in what your grade will be at the end of the semester. And if you don't do it, then that's it. You know, better luck next time. Sorry. But in life, there is no next time. We're given one chance in this world. We're given one chance in this world. So if we go through that span of life and we don't maximize it, so don't expect to have a chance to fix it later. So if that's scary, okay. So it has to be a little bit of a pachad, a little bit of a healthy medium. I don't think there's anyone in this room, Baruch Hashem, who will go overboard with that machshava, but rather can take it in its proper, with its proper message. It's a critical message. It's now or never. Most people, Sol Sharm says, never get that point until it's too late. So this Ad Khan, this is Sol Sharm's Eitza for Tier B. There's the Shleimim, they're the people who are at the top of the ladder. This is for the people who are pechusime ela. He doesn't really define them. He just says they're below that upper echelon of tzaddikim. They're maybe the regular people. Now he moves on to the ha'ara l'chol ha'amon, the motivation and the way to arouse chol ha'amon, the hamon am, the general population. Okay? So now we have to figure out where we fall. Are we motivated by what motivates the general population? Or are we a little bit beyond that? But Ad Khan, apparently, even that very simple notion that the time is now, don't lose that opportunity, even that's not enough for most people. L'chol hamon, for the vast majority of Jews, of human beings in this world, it's not enough for them to just contemplate the fact that time is limited. Time runs out. So if that doesn't push you, then what does push you? So he continues, Rabbi Osai, Ach ha'har l'chol hamon, in Perek Dal, about midway through the Perek. He says, he says that then we need to talk on a different plane. We need to talk about schar and onesh, reward and punishment. A person has to see to the extent to which omakadin, the profound depths of judgment reach. He says if you weren't scared off up until now, this is gonna shock you. He says it will cause you to tremble and always be in fear if you really knew the depths of judgment. Who is going to be able to withstand judgment? HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hashkafa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's awareness and ability to calculate everything. Even the smallest, tiniest detail, and certainly the larger issues, are all subject to Hashem's scrutiny. And if we're honest with ourselves, that's something which can be frightening. Even simple way of conversation between a husband and wife, which again it's private, doesn't affect anybody else, it's just between two people, and it's a sicha kala. Sicha kala seems to imply something which is almost, not much thought goes into it, and maybe is inconsequential in our minds, and nevertheless that is still called to judgment b'shas adin as well. A guy I was teaching as a chassan. So he once wanted to say pshat in this Maamar Chazal. Afilu sicha kala shebein ish l'ishto. Even a light matter, a light conversation between a husband and wife. Okay, so simple pshat. We're saying, like they're just sort of hanging around. They're having breakfast together and they're just schmoozing, right? So, okay, there's a way to say things. There's a sensitivity. There's a refinement that should really govern everyone's conversations, whoever you're having breakfast with. But maybe even, in the privacy and comfort of your own home, between you and your wife, between two spouses, there isn't judgment. There's just a comfort, and it's as if you're talking to yourself, right? So the no inhibitions. So that's also something a person has to speak with their refinement. He said a different pshat, and I think this is an important lesson in marriage and relationships in general. Afilu sicha kala. Why that choice of words, kala, kuf lamin hay, light. So the opposite of light is. Heavy, kala, kuf, lamed, hey, kal, it's light. So the opposite is heavy. How do you say heavy in Hebrew? Kaveh. So I think Rav Shamshon Fuller Hirsch points out something very, very insightful, which we should all think about, in the Aseres Dibros. It says, kabeidas avicha v'simecha, right? So the word honor is exactly the same shorish as what means heavy. What's the pshat? So, we sort of use this colloquially as well, right? If you say something's heavy, right? Like it's something very important, something very deep, something very, critical, right? It's monumental. It's like a monument, right? A monument is made out of very heavy things, solid stone, right? It's heavy. It's bearing on me. It's weighty. It's great. There's a gravity to it. Also, weighty and gravity, right? So, kabed zavicha v'asimecha means the way you honor someone essentially is how much weight you give to what they say, to the to what they do, to what they represent. Heaviness is really another way of displaying or communicating honor, because it really comes down to the same issue, right? I take something seriously if it's someone that I owe that respect and that honor to. So kavedas avicha v'simecha means that I'm honoring them. I stand up when they walk in the room. Yes, that's a big mitzvah. Person at your age, you should stand up for your parents when they walk in the room. You should stand up for your father-in-law, your mother-in-law when they walk in the room. At least you should make a little, gesture like that to get out of your seat a few inches. That's a mitzvah midoraisa. A mitzvah midoraisa. It's true they might be mochel, and they're allowed to be mochel. We usually assume the reason why parents don't, little kids aren't taught to do that is because there's a mechila. You don't want to drive your kids crazy. You don't want to, you're not a despot in your own home. But at your age, it's a really good thing. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's a mitzvah that brings long life. Find any aspect of kibbutz avim. When you're home in L.A. after months of being away, you should run to the room where your parent is about to enter so you can stand up for them. Constantly ask your mother, your father, can I get you something to eat, something to drink? Mitzvah d'oraisa. Are you going outside? Can I grab your coat from the closet? Mitzvah d'oraisa. Arichas yamim. Seres adibros. So kabbutz avicha v'simecha, you're not just honoring them. That's beautiful, that's important, but really what it's an expression of is you are really important. You are weighty, and there's gravity to my relationship with you, and the way in which I look at you is with that same importance. So asicha kala means that you're not really giving significance to it, right? Sicha kala, a light matter, the opposite of kavod. So filu sicha kala bein ish l'ishto suggests that the husband is perhaps not giving the weightiness and the gravity to what's important to his wife. Classic, Rabosai, this is the number one engagement advice I would give everybody. Okay, Aaron, have you gone registering for like dishes and stuff like that? Bebeth Mion? Yeah, okay, classic, okay? I don't know how I guess that. Rabosai, this is the number one mistake of every chassam, okay? You go to whatever store that you're going to pick out your housewares, okay? And you got to come along, even if you don't really care. Okay, that's what you do. You're dating, you're engaged. Got to be a mensch. Okay, fine. But once you're there already, like, okay, you're just sort of like tagging along, checking your phone. Oh, you like this one? Oh, yeah, that looks really nice. You know, that'll be great for Shabbos silverware. You know what? And like, okay, so you narrow it down. She narrows it down to two. Okay? And she says, we'll leave you out of that. Shlomi. Which ones do you like better? I'm like, I don't care. Like, what's the difference? Like, you know, they both pretty much look the same to me. That, and you're thinking, wow, like, I'm going to be such a good husband. I'm laid back. You know, like, I'm easygoing. Whatever you want, you pick. It's fine for me. Oh, chas v'shalom rabosai. That is the biggest slap in the face. Biggest slap in the face. What that is saying is, what's important to you is absolutely childish and ridiculous, and stop wasting my time. Pick something. Let's get out of here. I got to go back to YU. Okay? Or something. Obviously, no guy would ever say that. He would never say that. And he may not actually be thinking that, but the way that's processed by your significant other in a, you know, from the female set of lenses is really just, you know, as if you said those words very loudly, and you screamed it to the entire store, okay? So everyone can sort of pick their own application of this, and I must have said this to one or two of the guys in the shiur over the years, but that's like a classic example of a misunderstanding of what's going on. Your job is to register an opinion. She's probably not going to listen to your opinion anyway if she disagrees with you, but your job is to relegate importance to the decision-making process at hand. You come home from work one day, and your wife bought a flower pot or something like that. And she can't figure out if she should put it on the table or by the window. You're like, come on, like, why are you asking me? Oh, yeah, it's fine. It'll be good over there. Wherever you want. No. You need to show, even if you don't care one bit, that if it's important to you, it's important to me. That's how I show gravity. That is the kavod. That is the kaved. It's not just kal. It's not just a waste of time. It's not a light, insignificant matter. I'll say one more example. This is so true. And this, you find this in Revolbi's Kuntres on Shalom Bayis and Sifsei Chaim. You come home from work one day, and your wife says, Josh, we spoke about that? You never spoke about this. Ah, noodles, okay? Thank you, Josh. Did I say this over in Shir in the past? No, okay. So a guy comes home, and his wife says, oh, so nice to see you. Would you like macaroni and cheese or spaghetti? And he's like, you know, Xer Shava pasta. It's all the same. Just give me a bowl of Frosted Flakes and I'll be fine. You know, like, and like, what difference does it make? You don't chab that your wife, since 7 o'clock in the morning when she woke up, the only thing she's been thinking about in every free moment is, what can I make for my dinner, for my husband, to give him a geschmack, nice homemade meal after a hard day at work or whatever. Okay? So it's so easy. I'm sorry if I've said this over before. It's just important. We need to reinforce it. For myself, need to reinforce that the way you show respect for a person, number one, is to say whatever you want to talk about, whatever you are thinking about, is important to me too. So sicha kala ben ish l'ishto means, you know what's going to come before the din, you know what you have to be concerned, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is magidin lo adam shas hadin, that if you took that conversation, if you took that matter that your wife felt was important to her, and you treated it as a sicha kala, then I'm telling you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have a tino on you in the future. And it's going to say, you did not give the proper respect. You did not make what was coveted. Instead, you made it a sicha kala. Yes?
Why